Let's talk about the incident that occurred over Labor Day weekend. Can you bring us to the beginning of the harassment and threats that you've had to deal with?
I lived at the residence on First Street for approximately 2.5, 3 years, just about 3 years total. And the first year and a half were just fine. Just a typical, and I hate to say typical, but typical minor racist comments, but nothing to get an uproar over. But over the last year or so, my previous landlord sold the house to his sister, and she kind of brought some racial tension, or she kind of fueled the flame in the area. So my immediate neighbors, who ended up being Donald DeCarlos, or the guy who vandalized the truck, he and I and you know, his family and my family, we kind of no longer were friends after the tension kind of raised in the neighborhood. But before that, we were, our children are in the same grade. But so at the end of the day, I decided to move out of the neighborhood. It was just too much. My children were visiting family and out of town, so I thought it was the most opportune time to just go ahead and move and just to kind of avoid any kind of tension. But as I decided to move and got the U-Haul truck, I made my first load, which was the majority of my house, and I unloaded it at the new place and came back and parked the truck at the old place on First Street and went out for dinner. And upon returning, it was vandalized with swastikas, hate words, racist words, go home nigger, white power, coon, 1488 swastika signs, and lightning bolts, or SS sign. I'm not sure exactly about that part. But and the tires were slashed. So that was just really disheartening to come home to, seeing that I had bowed out and said I was going to leave the neighborhood anyway because I didn't want my children going through that.
And just so people know, the graffiti that was on the truck, the number 1488, it's a well-known, you know, white nationalist kind of code, and 14 stands for the 14 words. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for our white children. 88, of course, represents Heil Hitler.
Heil Hitler, yeah.
So the Rome Police Department, as I understand it, initially reported this as a minor incident of graffiti. Do you feel they took this incident seriously from day one? And what happened next?
Just being empathetic as I am, I could kind of see where maybe the confusion came in, but I would like to hear their original recording because I'm not sure if I said exactly what terms were on the truck, but it was at 1 o'clock and between 1 and 1:30 in the morning. I just thought that maybe a little bit more attention could have been paid to it. I understand there was a stabbing at the time, and then there was also a theft of some children got their cell phones stolen, so that kind of just took up all the resources at the time, and that was the reason for the delay, almost 2 hours for them to even come out there, and for me to call back three or four times, actually. But and it was a Friday night going into Saturday morning. It was really disheartening knowing that they said that there were only four police officers on duty. Like, it's a Friday night, Saturday morning. It's not winter time, you know. The crime is kind of lessened in the winter time, but it wasn't really winter time yet or anything. So I don't know the reasoning for the reduced staff, but it was just very, very much an inconvenience for me. It was worse, and that usually is how it happens when you need them. You know, it's the skeleton crew.
How did your family and friends and you respond to this incident?
My family is in an uproar. They still are. My family and my friends, they know I'm more of a passive person, and I like to keep the peace a lot. And they are the main ones telling me, Joy, we can't keep brushing this under the rug anymore. You have to speak up. And the only real reason that they even knew about it was because my phone, the camera was full, and the only way I could get proof of it was to go live on Facebook. So that was the only reason why anybody outside of myself knew about it, was because that was my only way of being able to record the damage, was to go on Facebook Live. So in some kind of way, it was a blessing to not be deleting my pictures. But, you know, whatever method, you know, God had me take, it got put out there, and it did help me find my voice, because everybody, white, black, family, friend, and even some foes, they're still here. They're backing me up to let me know that this is a great injustice and that we do stand together. Even though there are some that don't, you know, some that are, I don't want to say against the cause, but just not for unity. But there are a lot that are, and it's really good to see the many different faces come together.
And you joined forces with neighbors and activists who heard about this. What happened next? Can you talk about the protests that occurred?
Everybody just came and drove, oh my goodness, from the Utica abolitionists to people in Rome where before this we really didn't have any kind of foundation. I mean, I say we as the younger community who has feelings. We have feelings, you know, or we have opinions about things and just didn't really have much direction. So it was really great to see the outlying communities come together and show us how to peacefully protest or to get our point across, you know, in a peaceful manner, even though we still did come up against some you know, turmoil a little bit and some tension, but they let us know how to peacefully do it and with respect to ourselves and also to the community. We're not burning down neighborhoods.
And do you think that those protests and the work that you did on your end were effective and helpful in getting the city of Rome and the Rome Police Department to take this more seriously?
I absolutely do. There have been a few things that have actually been put into motion, you know, put into place since the vandalism occurred. And we're just grateful to see a little bit of progress because looking back, we've been in this community our whole lives and we've never, I don't know if it was just because we were younger and we weren't really at the city council meetings like we are now, or we weren't involved in the political assembly as we are now. But, you know, growing up, it was just, we'd always just be in a room talking to each other, upset about stuff. But now it seems like we're kind of getting some cooperation and communication with Captain Beach, you know, from Rome PD, Captain Corigliano, and a few others, the DA, Garamone. And they're taking us seriously. They're allowing us a seat at the table. And I think that's a great first step.
I know that Officer Pachica of the Rome Police Department doxed or outed another black woman in Rome, Utica abolitionist Jasmine Milner, and her father,
yes,
a former New York State trooper, and also mentioned plans for future protests to a known white supremacist named James Smalden. Can you talk about the events surrounding that?
That was very disheartening to see that, as it did take place about 10 feet from my door, from my front door, from where this officer was supposed to be there to protect and serve, not to dox us, not to out us. I don't understand his motive behind it, because it, there's nothing good could have come from that. That was nothing but pure hate. And hate associates itself with a lot of problems, but I've never seen hate solve a problem. So I don't know what his motive was behind that, but and then at the also, you know, we took the complaint down to the police station about midnight when we caught wind of the video that was out there of Mr. Smalden, and we were reassured that the police department was going to be there to make sure that we were safe and that we weren't in any kind of harm's way, and that was not true. So that just kind of tied in with the fact that we saw a police officer out us last night, and now here the whole police department is lied to us right in our face and said that they were going to be there to protect us. Or just to, in any case, if I was to have a house party with that many people, they would have been there. But yeah, we're having a rally for Black Lives Matter, and it doesn't matter to them.
Do you feel like there's been any satisfactory resolution, specifically with what Officer Pachica did, or, you know, hearing anything from the police department or any city officials?
Quite frankly, there's been no transparency at all when it comes to the Pachica case. We're proud that we were able to go down and actually voice our opinion and get it on record, but we still don't even, we aren't even, number one, confident that it is actually on record. We just keep hearing somebody stick their head out the door and says, we're looking into it. And, or, we had an officer tell us that what our complaint entitled, that they did find it to be true. That what it entailed, they did find it to be true. So now what next? Okay. We're not lying. We weren't lying. There's video footage of it. So now what do you all do? And it's an ongoing investigation. So this man should not be walking the streets. I mean, or even maybe on desk duty. Me, myself, I've been trying to keep my address private because I do not trust officers like him. I don't know what kind of retaliation, you know, that might happen, or, you know, and I have black sons, and I don't want them to be harassed for me just trying to speak up and make sure that we have an equal opportunity.
Certainly, and it does seem, not just in Rome, but in general, it's a greater risk for black people in particular to, and, you know, just in addition to the daily institutional racism that people encounter to, you know, there is greater risk involved with taking political action and speaking out.
There definitely is. And I know we've been having a big communication and a big conversation with the people of not just the black community, but all the community, the younger people we're trying to focus on. Because, you know, our elders are great. You know, they marched, but they can't march anymore, you know. So it's our turn to kind of take over the reins a bit. But we could hear the concerns of the younger generation, whereas, you know, we've dealt with police harassment or brutality in the past, and now things seem to have calmed down, and no one wants to ruffle anyone's feathers. They're like, man, they just stopped pulling me over for no reason. Why am I going to go protest, and now they're going to really start pulling me over? You know, or why can't I hit the god that everybody's willing to financially support or something, but no one wants to put their face out there just for fear of some sort of institutional retaliation or systematic retaliation. You just never know.
Right. And so I did want to say that the Rome police eventually apprehended the suspect who you mentioned earlier, 40-year-old Donald DeCarolis, with aggravated harassment, criminal mischief, making graffiti, and criminal tampering. These charges were also labeled as hate crimes?
There were two of the four were hate crimes, I believe. I'm not sure exactly which two.
A grand jury investigation was convened. Your witness, but you recently found out that there are other witnesses. What happened to them?
Yes. One lady, I believe she's an Hispanic lady. She lives across the street, approximately six or seven houses down, and she received some debris thrown on her yard that noted 1488. So that's where, and white supremacy and the swastikas. So that's kind of how they tied those two things together. But the interesting thing about her case was it happened about a year and a half prior. So that let them know that this is not a one-time thing. This is somebody who still lives in the neighborhood from a year and a half ago until now. And it was, you know, just the same rhetoric and writing.
And the other witness?
Then the other one was a white guy who's actually friends with the lady who had the 1488 stuff thrown on her yard. And he would bring the lady's boyfriend over to his house, who was black. And he got a note on his door saying to stop allowing niggas to come in his house. And niggas only bring crime and drugs.
Mm. Do you have reason to believe that there's something more organized, that these are not isolated? I mean, do you think that there are deeper organizational connections to white supremacist groups?
Absolutely, but not necessarily centered around just, you know, Little Italy and Rome, New York. I think it's more of there's a substantial amount of people in Oneida County or Madison County or in the surrounding areas, and I do believe that they have a group, and I've been kind of informed that there is a group.
Hmm. Finally, I wanted to just kind of comment that, you know, there's been growing outrage at the Rome Police Department over the last several months in particular. In addition to the events that we just discussed now, the Rome Police Department also brutally attacked a group of children and teenagers playing football in Guyer Field. And the following day, they attacked a peaceful demonstration organized in response to that, arresting three activists in the process and giving one of them, Juan Gonzalez, a black eye. So in your view, what has to change in the city of Rome in order to seriously address the causes of both institutional racism and violence, as well as vigilante racism and violence?
I think the first time that these police officers get on the scene, they make an assessment right away, and unfortunately it's based on race. So the racial relations have to be addressed. You should not come out here and see, I don't care how many 14 and 15-year-olds, but they're still 14 and 15-year-olds. You shouldn't look at them any different than you look at a group of 14 and 15-year-old white girls or white boys. It's that there's a fear set in these, I don't know if it's a fear or just a sense of authority that's just too vamped up with our police department. And I must admit, there are great police officers out there. They've come over and they've checked on me. I don't know how they know my address, but and make sure that where I live now is a safer place, and then I greatly appreciate and I feel like it's genuine. But then there are others that automatically put their mean voice on when it comes to a black person when you don't even know if, you know, that person's harmful. So race relations is definitely one thing. De-escalating situations instead of escalating them. And also, to have more minorities in our police department, we need to get out there and have job training for our children or let them know that there are opportunities in the police force. And I mean, not just all, you know, black children, but my Latinos and Asian and all different types, and also white people. It's all inclusive. And I think we need to be all inclusive now instead of trying to say, I can see why people say Black Lives Matter kind of aggravates them, but the thing is that Black Lives didn't matter. And that's why we had to say Black Lives Matter. Nobody said Blue Lives don't matter. Black Lives Matter, Brown Lives Matter, Yellow Lives Matter, White Lives Matter. We all do. But for the longest time, for 400 years, Black Lives have not mattered. And that's why there's that focus.